Well, we're going to say with movies, or not quite with movies, but something which disrupted that world, which is the this week marks the 50th anniversary of Home Box Office, HBO, which launched on November 8th in 1972. It was originally launched as a pay channel for movies and sports, but it pivoted to original programming in the 90s and transformed the landscape of the medium of television. And we're going to look back at some of HBO's most groundbreaking series with Dr. Jory Lagerway, Associate Professor in Television Studies in UCD. You're very, very welcome to the programme. Listen, HBO, I sometimes forget that that's what it actually meant. It was Home Box Office. But how did it come about? And why was it such a disruptor?
So it started out as Home Box Office, this idea that you could get movies at home on your television without all of the decency rules that you would have on broadcast. So it wouldn't be edited for commercials. It would still have all the sex and violence and language in it. And that was their main strategy for competing with other broadcasters with deeper pockets, who were better established back in the 70s when they started.
Yeah, because at the 70s, it was sort of sex and sport that sort of overrode regulators, that it sort of was outside of that. Mm-hmm. And it was, I suppose, what was innovative was that they introduced a subscription model. So it wasn't just everybody sitting around and watching the ads or kind of watching TV that had been regulated. And was that an innovation in and of itself? Like, I mean, how did mm-hmm. they get around those regulatory rules?
Yeah, they got around them exactly, as you said, by introducing the subscription model, which became incredibly influential because it created this.
Was it pay-per-view at the start, or did it emerge to more like what we're so used to now?
It was what we're so used to now, where you'd pay a monthly subscription. And it was this idea that it was catering to elite audiences, kind of more savvy and, of course, more affluent audiences who were happy to pay that additional fee for the monthly subscription. And in return, you got to say, oh, well, I saw the real version of that, or I got to see this. They were boxing in particular was one of the sports.
One of the huge things that has transformed.
Yeah, exactly. And so they got to say, you know, yeah, I could see that fight live on HBO. And so it was really kind of creating this idea that they had a special audience, that they weren't TV. And they came up with this slogan, you know, 10 or 15 years later, very famous slogan, it's not TV, it's HBO, really trying to set themselves aside from.
So what's so what we take for granted, mass market, but that was actually quite exclusive. It was kind of creating and generating those elite audiences. In terms of business practice, obviously, it had a huge pop, but it obviously disrupted our notions about TV at that time. But I suppose its real breakthrough was when it moved beyond maybe the sex, smut and sport and actually got into, if I can say that, I think we can, from its early days, but into then that in fact that it was the original programming that it started to get into that mm-hmm. really sort of made HBO earn its place in the TV history books.
Absolutely. So in the mid to late 90s, they started, I wouldn't say they got away from the smut and the,
no.
the smut and the violence and the language was still a huge draw, right?
Yeah.
But
and
in
it still
fictional,
is.
Exactly.
It
absolutely.
Still is.
It was in the 90s that they said, okay, we've got this audience, but we want to target awards in particular and critical acclaim and make a bigger name for ourselves. And they did that with the drama and comedy programming that many of the listeners are probably really familiar with.
Yeah, and like, I mean, and it's interesting because just as I hear you speaking, I'm just going, is this not Netflix? Is this not what they tried to do and what they emulated? Any discussion of HBO's place in TV history, and we're going to go look at them, but the big, big one, I suppose, that people still hold forth is The Sopranos.
Yep, absolutely. That's the one people always talk about. Funny enough, you know, if you had asked this question 10 years ago, I think people would have said The Wire before they said The Sopranos. And I'm a big stickler for remembering that Sex and the City actually came before The Sopranos. But it was at the time really innovative programming, combining this sort of very serious, again, violent, sexy genre of gangsters and mobsters with really traditional TV fare of family melodrama that was really very soapy.
And let's remind people of some of those two particularly big ones. Sex and the City. I don't know if we have a clip from that. We were all addicted to this when we were younger.
When I finish a new piece, I usually celebrate by opening a bottle of Chateau Latour. How do you celebrate?
By buying shoes and purses.
Well, in that case, have you ever heard of the Vogue accessories closet? Kid in a couture candy store.
This is too much.
It's absolutely, I nearly remember all of them. But Jory, it's interesting because it will, you know, and you're right, because it did come before The Sopranos. But with Sex and the City, you know, it was also groundbreaking because it was this female led programming.
Yeah, it was HBO's first. And for a long time after, it was HBO's only. Difficult Women, as opposed to the Difficult Men it was so well known for. And it had these great female friends who talked about sex and work and, you know, on the really positive side, it had these kind of not necessarily lovable women that we hadn't seen very often, especially not on this kind of elite programming. On the less positive side.
Because HBO dined out on that for a long time, this kind of, oh, look, you know, it's we're empowering women. It's all kind of quite feminist. What came later in the programming, I think, would maybe not be applied to that. But going to The Sopranos, what do you talk about that? Because James Gandolfini, it was, you know, it was the... It was great writing, but it was investment. It was the great anti-hero. What was it that it worked so well for HBO?
I mean, you can't beat soaps. Soaps are the oldest genre in TV. The interpersonal conflict is what people watch television for. And they just kind of hid that underneath this mobster genre so that it was safe for men to say, I love this soap opera too. And so you double your audience. And you've got really high budgets, really interesting, complex, ongoing stories, keeping people coming back week after week, exactly like a soap opera.
Like, I mean, the hitman going to his therapist because he can't handle his life in the mob and his life at home. Let's listen to that other Tony Soprano and his wife having a little kitchen contretemps.
The priest spent the night here. What happened?
Nothing.
Where was Anthony?
He was sleeping over at Jason's.
The priest spent the night here. Nothing happened. And you're telling me this because...
You might hear something. Take it the wrong way. His car was out front all night.
What'd you guys do for 12 hours? Play, name that Pope?
He gave me communion.
Oh, I'll bet he gave you communion.
Excuse me?
Just sort of, you forget just how absolutely well written it was. The Sopranos, though, for HBO and this kind of really leaning into the difficult men provided a boom for subscriptions, which is sort of had a virtuous effect because then they'd more money to invest in even more more programming.
Absolutely. So Sopranos spawned all kinds of amazing hits.
I know 6 feet Under.
6 feet Under was incredible. Yeah, like you wouldn't expect a show about a family funeral home to be a huge draw, but it had the exact same formula as The Sopranos with a kind of strange business and family melodrama. And in that one, it was two brothers taking over the funeral home from their father who had died suddenly.
Well, one of the Wire, I think you mentioned, is one of the contenders. There's a lot of stuff about what were the top 10, what were the top 50, but it would have been, it's certainly high up there for the contender for one of the best shows of all times that were brought to us by HBO.
Absolutely. The thing that The Wire did that none of HBO's other shows did was have a different story arc every season. And so it took this kind of, at the time, unusual location, Baltimore, a kind of smaller city, and went to this really sort of gritty, dark underground and put us with cops listening in on criminals. So the first season introduced us to the drug trade, and each season from there on out took aim at a kind of public institution in Baltimore. And again, copying from The Sopranos, had really complicated, complex storylines and a lot of interpersonal drama.
So the formula was diverse enough. It's so funny now I'm getting loads of texts about what their favourite was. Bill said, for me, Veep will always be HBO's greatest creation, female-led, socially relevant and fiercely, bitingly funny. Long live Selena Meyer. But it was Difficult Men that actually proved the secret sauce to their formula. Mm-hmm. I have to say, I kind of, you know, another one of the big, big ones that they're known for is Game of Thrones. And mm-hmm. I kind of struggled with aspects of that, just that kind of, you know, kind of pornification of violence or particularly sexual violence on women. Yeah. And I balked away from sort of a lot of that. So it mm-hmm. seems that they hadn't really moved away. Unfortunately, that formula sells.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing more violent mm-hmm. on television than Game of Thrones. And as you said, especially sexual violence. Mm-hmm. And it worked. And it was pirated so heavily that HBO started making quicker international deals so that it would air on Sky Atlantic, for example, just a couple days after. And it was actually the show that made HBO explode beyond the boundaries of this small niche audience that they had been targeting for so long.
And of course, the demand for that type of programming says a lot about the rest
exactly
of us.
That's exactly it, right? Yeah.
Going back then just to the impact, because, you know, you know, when you were talking about the early days of HBO, I was kind of going, is that one up? What Netflix and streaming were all trying to do, albeit mm-hmm. in a digital age. But HBO, I think, was, you know, it kind of seems quaint now, but it was satellite tech that they were kind of, that was the big mm-hmm. innovation at that time. What do you think their impact of HBO has been on the history of television and what it actually presaged and what it actually came before in terms mm-hmm. of streaming and the type of programming and even the way we appreciate art and film now?
I mean, it's really hard to overstate how influential it is in terms of business practices, in terms of innovating with technology, and as we've been talking about with programming. And you've mentioned Netflix and Amazon a few times, and their influence is absolutely there as well, right? Game of Thrones was such a massive hit that now Amazon has these epic fantasy dramas like Wheel of Time and Rings of Power trying to copy exactly that hit. And it is that sort of leap model of having a kind of expensive subscription, mm-hmm. but leading with a hit that gets so much critical attention and awards attention that it draws people into your other programming. And Netflix and Amazon have both copied that.
Because you chose A.
Exactly.
The next kind of list of things. What does it augur kind of, I suppose, maybe for the future of television? You know, what do you think, you know, is, you know, what is it about? It's almost like a little bit of a drug because they're always dragging us in that, you mm-hmm. know, and you've seen this. So then this kind of next bit is essential, and especially with, you know, the fact that you can watch five or six episodes in one evening, whereas previously you would have been waiting week after week to get the installment. That seems so quaint now.
Yeah. I mean, if we go back to HBO, it is great to look at the kind of programming that they're starting to cultivate now. So we get shows like Insecure and I May Destroy You that are really testing the boundaries of these really difficult white men who have been their bread and butter. And like I May Destroy You is a really just fantastic show. It's creative. It pushes boundaries of genre. It's really aesthetically innovative and interesting. And hopefully we can continue to have places on television that are willing to sink the budgets and take the risks on things like that. Because otherwise, Netflix and Amazon, they have a content imperative, right? They just have to have more and more and more. And that's how they get the audiences, by quantity, rather than they don't honestly care very much about quality. And so hopefully we'll continue to have at least something like HBO out there.
Everybody's offering up their favorite. Someone says even before The Wire, there was the brilliant Homicide on Broadcast TV. Not sure I've seen anything as good on it. Another said, is it Treme? Is it incredible? Yeah. HBO show following its ensemble cast lives in a devastated New Orleans post-hurricane Katrina, made by the same people that made The Wire. Before I let you go, Dr. Jeri Lagerwey, what is your favourite HBO of all time?
Oof, I wasn't prepared for that question. Do you know, it changes all the time based on what I've watched most recently. So for today, I'm going to say I May Destroy You. It's recent. It's not a classic. But like I just said, it's really creative and interesting, and I'm excited for Michaela Cole.
Something makes me think in 50 years' time we'll still be talking about The Sopranos. Listen, thank you so much. Associate Professor in Television Studies at UCD, Dr. Jory Lagway. Thanks a million for joining us. We'll take a quick break.
Email brendan@rte.ie.